south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, first, just a little late-breaking news about my January Latin American Insider Seminar. I spoke about it quite a bit in the last show, so I'm not going to drone on about it much anymore. I just want to advise you, this might be one of your last chances to really get your boots on the ground, get a huge head start on becoming an expat in Latin America. Most people say it's a 2 to 5 year head start on that process. But you know that already. Anyway, if you're interested, I have the link for the webpage. Just send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com and I'll send you a link and you'll get all the information and the sign-up details. Oh, and one last thing. If you sign up before November 1st, you get a $500 discount. So do take advantage of that. Oh, and one last thing. For those emails that have been trickling in from alumnus of previous seminars that I've given, and I've given already 8 seminars. And of course, you know I have repeat offenders at every seminar. You know, people who want to take it twice, 3 times. I've even had people take the seminar 4 separate times. You imagine that? And, you know, because I've got a lot of seminar alumni now, and they certainly can step to the front of the line. From now on, here's the policy for former attendees who want to become repeat offenders. You'll immediately get a $1,000 discount off the price. And for those repeat offenders who've come to their 3rd, 4th, and even 5th seminars, I'll do even better than that, because by then, surely we're all really good friends, and friends always have their privileges, right? So just figured it was time to mention that and set up a firm policy, because emails do trickle in from previous attendees. And not to drag this out any longer than I have to, but I want to clarify that there are 6 hotel nights and 7 days included in the price. So to get the full details, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the seminar info page link. That's all you'll need. Enough said about that. Now, today happens to be a red letter day, whatever a red letter day is. I don't know what that is, but that's what they call these things. It's my 500th show. Yes, The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, lives on forever in the ether. Till the government goons or Russian hackers take the net down, that is. Anyway, there's another little known fact that goes along with my show. I was informed just recently by statistics buffs, people who check these things out, I was the very first person in the whole world to have a continuous weekly international show covering the theme of expats in Latin America, to which most of the world will say, big deal, huh? Now, back then, 5 or 6 years ago, there were a lot of shows broadcasting one-off programs about a particular Latin topic, but not a continuous weekly broadcast all about Latin America. And now, of course, there's all kinds of people trying their hand at it, a lot of them idiots, who never set a single foot off the gringo tourist trail, but, you know, you have to weed that stuff out for yourself. Now, over the years, I've been asked to do more than 2 shows a week, and I've been asked to do hour-long shows, too, but to my way of thinking, I think a half-hour show 2 times a week is about all the traffic can bear. You see, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes for a minute. I mean, you're the ones that have to listen, right? In that regard, since I've got 500 shows now in the can, so to speak, I've been getting emails from people asking me when I'm going to compile all those shows together and get them all out in one package. Well, you know, I'd be willing to do that, but think about it. That would be slightly less than 250 hours of me blathering on. And of course, we're talking about keywords and topic lists and reference points. For example, if you want to hone in on certain points like crime in Colombia, the old vomit care effect on expats, premium coffee enemas, or Latin fortune cookie tampons, you know, there really is such a thing, of course. That means someone would have to either sit down and listen to all those shows or have some kind of computer program pick out the keywords. Then, and only then, would a project like that be feasible. Then we could package the thing and sell it for a nominal fee. And, you know, a couple of listeners have come forward offering to do that. Oh, they had high hopes and so did I, and they got off to a flying start, but after a while it just kind of petered off. Way too much work, I guess. And I understand that. Still, I think there's got to be a way to automate the keyword and key phrase finding portion of that. So anyway, if any of you guys and gals out there want to take a crack at it, maybe you have a better idea on how to capture the keywords and the topics, etc., I'd be glad to partner up with you, but remember, you got to do that work, not me. I've already done my part. But know this, over the years, I've gotten so many emails from people asking if they could buy such a compilation. If the project ever did get done, it certainly wouldn't be for nothing. So I'm just throwing that out there. Now, I know some of you very astute listeners out there might be thinking, wait a minute, Johnny's in the land of cheap labor. Why doesn't he just hire some Latin person who's bilingual? He could probably get someone to do it for $2 or $3 an hour. That person could sit down and physically listen to all those shows and pull out the key phrases and words, cross-link them to a nice searchable index. Well, that sounds great, but the problem is, you see, nearly all Latin bilingual people learned English formally as a second language and don't really have a good handle on how to weight phrases and terms that may or may not be important. Now, suppose, for example, I was qualifying a phrase by saying, is the Pope Catholic? Well, guess what? Suddenly, my bilingual Latin English speaker would have two new keywords to search, Pope and Catholic, but it wouldn't make much sense to link those two words to a search. You get the idea. It kind of takes a real gringo to pull that kind of thing off. Fact is, I did try out a few Latin English speakers, and they were not able to categorize the topics properly. So if you've been wondering if my 500-show compilation package is available, the answer is no, but it could be. So if you're interested in taking a crack at it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And now, a little practical information. You might remember a year or so ago I was speaking about hotel safes. Are they secure? And I said back then, to a degree they are, and I use them sometimes myself. However, recently I caught a YouTube video showing how you could break into one of those safes with some very simple tools, 5 different ways. Yep, those electronic safes can be hacked and cracked. And we're not even talking about if someone at the front desk or a maintenance guy has the code or some kind of passkey. So go ahead, just go to YouTube and put in the search box, hotel room safe hack. See for yourself, there's at least 5 ways to do it. Now, even a year ago, when I mentioned I use those safes every so often myself, you have to keep in mind I'm talking about Latin America, not the first world, where people are much more educated and savvy about such things as hacks. That means in the first world, I'd never use such a safe for anything really valuable. Though I would use one as a decoy, which I'll explain in a minute. Now, you have to remember we're down here in the third world, Latin America, where the average person doesn't even know how to get on YouTube. And if he did, 90% of those YouTube videos are in English, and 99% of the ones in Spanish are music videos. So yes, those hotel safes can be hacked and easily. But as with everything in Latin America, especially off the gringo tourist trail, there's a huge lag time effect. So then what should you do? To play it safe, I wouldn't put anything valuable in the safe. Not if it's a seedy looking hotel anyway. In fact, what I've been doing lately, and I'm the overcautious type, is to put some kind of inexpensive decoy in any room where I find a hotel safe. So if someone there does know the tricks, they'll get some cheap cigars or some worthless souvenirs and tourist pamphlets. Then, realizing falsely, of course, that I was traveling light on valuables and cash, they'd move on to the next clueless gringo's room, thinking the jackpot was elsewhere. And you do know, of course, the hotel staff does size you up based on what you're driving, what you wear, and what your luggage looks like. So then, where do you put your valuables? If you can't conceal them on your body and you have to go out of the hotel room, that is. Well, glad you asked. There's a little book that I bought a long time ago. It's called, quite descriptively, The Big Book of Secret Hiding Places by Jack Luger. Look it up. You probably can get it off the internet somewhere, maybe even for free. Or maybe there aren't any copies anymore and I have one of the last paper ones. Could be. Anyway, this book has served me well for many years. Just know that in your hotel room, there are dozens and dozens of places to hide your valuables. And all you really need to make good use of those hiding places is your common Swiss Army knife or equivalent. But let me warn you, never buy a pirated Swiss Army knife made in China. They sell them on the street here in Latin America too, very cheaply. I understand real Swiss Army knives are now made in China too, or at least the parts come from China. Talk about false advertising. So anyway, you can rig a number of great hiding places in your hotel room. You can make all the preparations in 3 to 5 minutes. So what are my favorite hotel room hiding places? Number one, speaking of air conditioners, especially the wall-mounted ones, there's always a plate on the side or the back of one of those. It usually pops right off or has no more than 4 screws. So you take that plate off, stick your passport, your money, whatever in there, put that plate back on, and there'll be about a 1 in a million chance that anyone's going to walk in your room and pop that vent off and look for things. Now, my favorite place for stashing valuable small things like wads of cash or rings or jewelry, though I don't know why you'd be traveling with anything but junk jewelry myself. Ladies, if you plan on bringing down any jewelry at all, bring the stuff you wouldn't cry over if it went missing. Anyway, electric outlet plates are great for hiding the small stuff. Just 1 screw generally, or some don't even have screws. They're just plastic snap-on plates. You know what I'm talking about. So when you pop off that plate, there's always room on either side of the electrical outlet to stash money, whatever. I know you're saying, but Johnny, if I stick my hand in there, I'll get electrocuted. Well, here's a tip. Don't put anything metallic in that space. And do like so many smart expats do. Pack a very lightweight set of cotton gloves, you know, simple gardener's gloves you see at the hardware store for $2 a pair. You just won't believe how those things come in handy when you're traveling. Ask Michael Jackson. Want another great little place to hide things in your hotel room? Every ceiling lamp has a metallic plate it's suspended from, and there's usually 2 screws there. Generally, you unscrew them and the plate will drop, but the lamp won't. It's just there for looks, covering the electrical box hole. And you'll see there's plenty of space, often enough to get a passport or two into. And sometimes in dropped ceilings, there's a terrific amount of space. Now, remember, when it comes to hotel rooms and hotel bathrooms, anywhere there's a vent, if it's got a couple of screws in it, you can take that off and hide things in there, too. Oh, and by the way, another very, very handy thing to take with you anywhere you go on a trip is a small roll of packing tape or duct tape. Now, that always comes in handy for me when I'm in Latin American airports. You wrap that tape 7 or 8 times around your suitcase. That not only discourages airport luggage handler no-good-nicks from opening your stuff and possibly stealing what they can, it's great for spotting your luggage on the conveyor belt, too. Not to mention when you first grab it off the carousel, if that tape's been mangled or cut in any way, someone's been messing with you. You better have a look inside. Now, naturally, you should never stow anything very valuable in your luggage because, well, it'll be out of your sight for many hours and in the hands of airport people that you really shouldn't trust. I'm sure you've all seen those hidden camera and 60-minute exposés on luggage handlers, haven't you? Anyway, as far as those electronic hotel room safes, whether you want to use them, it's up to you, but I wouldn't do it up in the first world. And in the third world, well, the rule of thumb is this. If you're on the gringo tourist trail, I wouldn't do it. In places like Panama, Costa Rica, Playa del Carmen, Rio, Acapulco, Cancun, Iztapa, the locals know every gringo scamming trick in the book. However, off the gringo tourist trail, the maintenance workers and the cleaning staff, etc., are lucky to have a 6th grade education. Very unsophisticated, but still, the more stars your hotel has, or says they have, the fewer the incidents of pilfering. Why? Because these days, even in Latin America, hotels are putting in cameras and security systems and threatening their employees with polygraph tests. So once again, as for those hotel safes, it's buyer beware, your call. That said, here's something I think you'll get a kick out of. Now, note that all throughout Latin America, on practically every 3rd or 4th corner, you'll see some guy selling pirated CDs. Most are on foot with 2 or 3 backpacks. They'll try to flag you down by waving a handful of CDs, or they'll come up to your car when you're at a stoplight and tap on your window, which, by the way, a lot of us gringos absolutely hate. Especially fresh new gringos. They're thinking, get your stinking paws off my car, bud. But they won't, and you'll get used to it. Kinda. And like the local shoe repair guy or the druggist, you'll get to know your happy, smiling CD pirate guy, and he'll get to know you. And you'll be able to exchange defective discs and discs you don't like when you come back around the next time. Yep, even CD pirates have money-back guarantees. And like Expat Eddie says, you should try a few different CD pirates to see who's got the best quality items. Then, Eddie says, stick with them like you would a good bookie. Now, if you're a gringo or your Spanish sucks, the pirate will certainly lie to you to get you to buy a few CDs. Like, for example, if you ask if it's in English, the answer will almost always be, "Sí, señor." And if you're light-skinned and fair-haired, "Sí, conche." Now, the truth is, oftentimes I'll get a CD home, and the video will be perfectly fine, but the audio dubbed in Spanish, not in the original English at all. Totally unacceptable. Though oftentimes these pirated CDs will have English-lettered subtitles that are pretty messed up. So, I'd say about 70 to 80% of the CDs you buy from these guys actually are in the original English form, and you can switch it back and forth from English to dubbed Spanish. Which means one out of four or five CDs will be completely unacceptable, so you either bring them back to your CD pirate guy for a trade, or you give it to the maintenance guy or cleaning lady. And by the way, almost all gringo expats I know end up giving all their CDs away to the cleaning lady and maintenance guys anyway. Yep, people who make $200 to $300 a month in Latin America still have CD players. They don't have a washing machine or indoor plumbing, but a CD player, yes. Priorities, priorities, huh? So, for example, if I do get a Fast and a Furious or Mission Impossible or Star Trek video, then there's no problem. I should be able to understand it in Spanish, right? Wrong. As it turns out, and you'll figure this out for yourself if you learn Spanish, it's a terribly frustrating experience watching a first world movie dubbed into Spanish. Us long-term expats just can't stomach watching George Clooney or Brad Pitt or Ben Kingsley squeaking out words in Spanish in a totally different voice. I mean, come on, a huge part of an actor's performance is how he uses his voice, right? Worse yet, there's that obvious problem of the lips not being synced to the words. So it turns out me and all long-term expats who speak decent Spanish, no way can we sit down to watch a first world video without wanting to vomit. And like I said, it's a flip of the coin whether that's going to happen to you if you buy one of those pirated videos on the streets. You really never know till you get it home. However, there is some relief at hand here. If you go to one of those big, crazy, chaotic markets, there's always a bunch of pirated CD guys with little booths, little kiosks. And almost always, they'll have a CD player on hand, so when you sort through your CDs, just shove it in and you'll see and hear exactly what you're getting. Oh, and by the way, the going rate when you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail is about $1 a pirated CD. However, anytime you buy anything on the street, it's a barterer's game, so they'll often start at twice the price. And of course, they give volume discounts too, so get ready to play that game. However, on the Gringo Tourist Trail, you're looking at $2 to $2.50 a pirated CD. And they probably won't budge. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Intellectual property rights violations, Johnny. You're giving us tacit permission to buy pirated CDs, and that's totally against our principles. Well, the fact is, unless you live in a very upscale neighborhood or subscribe to Netflix, the only choice you're going to have in Latin America are pirated videos. Now, like I said, in high-end neighborhoods, you'll find a few video stores here and there, and you'll pay $1 or $2 to rent for a few days, which is why about 98% of the Latin public buys pirated CDs instead, because they can own them for $1. So, practically speaking, you could go from neighborhood to neighborhood to neighborhood and never find a real video store. Renting or selling legit videos, that is. Oh, by the way, when you're going into little mom-and-pop tiendas, you know, kind of tiny 7-Elevens, convenience stores are everywhere, on every corner, too. Nearly all these little businesses, including dry cleaning businesses, bakeries, hardware stores, when you go up to pay at the counter, they'll also have a nice big box or a basket full of pirated CDs you can buy on the way out. You know, impulse buys. So, note that when down in Latin America, if you like to watch first world videos and DVDs, if you want to remain the anal straight arrow type in that regard, no problem, then you could pay $6 to $8 a month extra on your cable TV bill and get the movie channels. Yes, they'll be running the same kind of current movies that you see up in the first world. You know, they're usually about 6 months behind the theaters, right? But I'll tell you, these pirate guys, they often get these first run, first world movies a couple of weeks to a month before they even end up in the theaters in the States. How they do that? Well, Russian hackers again, I guess. And really, that's no joke, because often when you buy a pirated DVD, you'll see embedded Korean, Japanese, or Russian subtitles. Annoying at first, but you soon get over it. Sometimes. So then you might ask, how many fresh gringos and gringo expats do I know who totally shun those pirate CD dealers for the sake of ethics and pure principle? Well, let me think. Would you believe none? So bottom line, am I endorsing the gray market pirate world? Well, I have asked myself that question, but I don't lose any sleep over it. Okay, now here's a topic everyone's interested in. How much do you need to live in Latin America? In past shows, I've mentioned all it takes is your average Social Security check, which is like $1,400 a month now, I guess. But of course, we're talking off the gringo tourist trail. That answer doesn't really seem to satisfy too many people, which is why frequently I get emails from people saying, Johnny, I've got $350,000 in the bank. I'm getting a $38,000 a year pension. You think that's really enough to live a nice, stress-free life in certain parts of Latin America? And when I get emails like that, I'm thinking, he's just not paying attention. With that kind of money in Latin America, you're way upper middle class and you could live anywhere. In fact, you'll probably be the king of your neighborhood. It's always about how much money do you need, and everybody's got different needs. Now, some people, maybe most people, always want more money. It's just for different reasons. Some want to show off. That would be 99.9% of Latins and pretty much everyone in California and on and on. Others just like to accumulate things. They buy junk, all kinds of junk, good and bad, until there's no more room in their house, attic, basement, and garage for it. Others, like me and so many other expats who've jumped off that treadmill a long time ago, we just want to have enough money so we don't need to have a boss. In other words, we don't have to punch a time clock or suck up to anyone. We're our own boss, really. And I wonder, how many of you listeners could walk up to your boss right now and say, screw you, I don't need your crap, I'm quitting? Well, let's just say you're in that spot and you're just so fed up. How much money would you need to come down to Latin America and start things up here? Well, like I said so many times before, I have lots and lots of expat friends who came down here pretty much as backpackers broke and who are now multi-millionaires. However, I'd say if you're a single person and young, between 20 and 35, let's say, you'd need to have kind of a safety margin of about $10,000 minimum. Why do I pick that number? Well, I think you could live pretty good down here off the gringo tourist trail for about a year on 10 grand. And if you haven't found some way to make money for yourself, again, being your own boss so you can actually enjoy your job for once, maybe it's by yourself or hooking up with another gringo or Latin person, internet business, whatever. And you know, you've got the indigenous people down here making all kinds of cool little items for import-export, and then there's coffee and mining, solar, rainforest, hardwoods, a million different things. If, after you've been down here a year and you're really looking to make some money and you haven't yet, I'd say you just weren't keeping your eyes open or had an unusually bad streak of luck, because that stuff rarely happens. And even if you're a really laid-back, unmotivated type, you could always get a job teaching English at one of those helicopter schools or at a call center, even bartending in an upscale business and hotel district. Expat bartenders are in great demand down here, especially off the tourist trail. But do look out for scams. Gullible, clueless, newbie gringos are always great marks. They get taken all the time. It's a fact that every gringo soon gets approached by locals and other gringos offering up surefire, tremendous business opportunities, even deals of the century, if only you'd partner up with them or invest your dough. The solution? Just keep reminding yourself you've only got 10 grand. And also, if it wasn't your great idea in the first place, don't invest. When you're approached with such a great deal, always ask yourself, if it's so great, why does he need me? Why hasn't he found some other gringo sucker to invest? Better yet, ask yourself, if he's so brilliant, why is he the same washed-out gringo you saw in the same clothes last weekend at the gringo bar? And if he's a local, ask yourself, why is he still riding a chicken bus? Which is why it's always a great idea to stay away from those gringo expat bars. Good advice. And I know when anyone first gets down here, you're drawn to those places because, well, if you don't speak Spanish, you get hungry for some real gringo bonding. But don't make it a habit or you'll end up in a rut like so many of the regulars at those expat bars. And yes, you'll see the usual types in there. There's always one or two unbathed, long-in-the-tooth Indiana Jones types who never really trudged through the jungle or climbed the volcano, much less snapped their whip. And somehow, if you manage to return a couple weeks later, you'll see some of the same people in the very same clothes, too. That should say a lot in itself. Then you've got your small contingent of pot-bellied, long-haired Vietnam vets and Harley guys without hogs, and lost in a time warp grungers and Grateful Deadheads, many on disability or social security checks from Uncle Sam. Now, most of the expat bar regulars are 30 to 50 years old. There's the ex-military, crew-cut jarhead, soldier of fortune types with plenty of Gulf War tattoos, but no neck tats because they've got no necks. Then there's this sort of lost generation, pseudo-intellectual, backpacker bohemian, long, thick, yellow fingernailed types in faded Hawaiian shirts and khaki shorts with bloodshot eyes who drink too much cheap beer and smell like it. Talk to one of these guys and they've got an opinion on everything. And they'll tell you about the great American novel they've been writing for the past 10 or 15 years. So it really is a pretty colorful crowd, but you wouldn't want to get too friendly with the regulars there, lest one or more of these guys finds out where you live and ends up crashing in your guest room for an undetermined period of time. Oh, and by the way, never, ever let one of these guys' apartment or house sit for you. That's what happened to Expat Eddie, but we'll save that story for another day. So you've got the pseudo-intellectuals, the bikers, the jarheads, the ex-military types, even military types if you're in a capital city because, you know, there'll be an embassy there and that's where all the military guys hang. Then you'll have those gone native, case of beer a day, drinking, red-eyed, armchair philosophers. And believe me, you don't want to get stuck sitting next to one of those guys. And I tell you, you don't want to get invited back to his dump to meet his Latina live-in and their three illegitimate half-gringo kids. So why am I mentioning this? Well, when I first got down, I met all those types, got invited to their houses and parties, and realized instantly I did not want to end up like that. Now, what's really strange is that of all the gringo expat bars I've been in many different Latin countries, nearly all of them have been owned by older, kind of hippie-ish gringa expat women. So how'd that happen? Well, the story usually goes like this. She, her husband, or her better half came down 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. They open up a bar, it attracts the gringo crowd, and soon enough, the guy goes native, becomes a lush, finds a Latin lover, he moves on or gets kicked out, and his ex gets the bar. Now, she might go native, become a lush, and find her own Latin lover, but still, the woman seems to be a bit more stable and businesslike. I've seen that time and time again off the gringo tourist trail. But with expat bars on the gringo tourist trail at Costa Rica, you'll have those regulars I mentioned, and half the crowd will be partying gringo tourists in the country for just a week or two.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.